I'm here to talk about a survey that was conducted, and I apologize too. Let me just say that the handouts did not run off that well. So for those of you who do not receive a copy, you're not missing out that much because the print's a little bit sketchy to read. So I'd be happy to send something your way if you need it. I'd like to first acknowledge a few key folks who played a role in our project, first of whom is Dr. Sharon Denham from Ohio University, who helped in the survey design for this project. I have to acknowledge my employer, Ohio Health, especially the Ohio Health Research Institute, Stonewall Columbus. You can read along with me, of course, on the list. I'd like to also say that in the last week, I've had the pleasure of presenting three separate research projects I've been involved in, the first of which has involved breast cancer and research involving the Amish community. The second's been healthcare disparities research with the Latino community. So I'm very glad to be here today and talking about our research with the lesbian community. But if I do get confused in my talk, I hope you'll correct me. We're not about the Amish today. This is definitely a lesbian study. Let me talk briefly about how this project started, and I'd say I don't have a first slide, as you see, to acknowledge any funding or sponsors. This was really a voluntary project that was done on behalf of Sharon and myself, just because we saw a need in the community to address these health issues and to learn more about Ohio's lesbian community. In addition to that, at the time in 2004, Stonewall Columbus was very much involved in trying to establish programs for the community. And while there are many programs that have been established for gay men, they were really lacking in where to move forward with programs with health issues involving the lesbian community. Now, I work for the largest healthcare provider in the state of Ohio, depending on the day. I guess Cleveland Clinic competes with us every once in a while. But we do serve 44 of 88 counties in the state. What's interesting is that we are a faith-based hospital, a Methodist hospital system, and while our mission is to improve the health of those we serve, this was really the first time an opportunity presented itself to actually partner with a GLBT organization in serving the lesbian community. Frankly, I was quite concerned about this partnership, and I was pleasantly surprised at the amount of support that vice presidents gave all the way up the ladder in participating in this study. I think what was even more interesting to me was that our hospital system was the first hospital to partner with Stonewall Columbus in any type of program. So I think this was really a true testament to following the mission we had for our hospital system. Now, of course, in being approached from Stonewall and looking at what are the healthcare issues facing the lesbian community, I don't have to tell all of you the varieties we see in the literature regarding a number of health issues and conflicting data that we find. Certainly, studies have shown an increased overweight and obesity in the community, but then conflicting data on tobacco and alcohol use, as you know. And some of you know that a lot of this stems from earlier research that was conducted in the community that indicated that lesbians, for example, were at higher risk for breast cancer, which has really been a big focus of my study, because of higher tobacco usage, alcohol usage. Well, then it was found that many of the earlier studies really were conducted where there were convenient samples of lesbian communities, and so they were conducted in bars. So, amazingly, the lesbian community did drink and smoke more when the only survey site was a bar. So, needless to say, we also saw studies that looked at depression and actually compliance, though, with mammography and pap smear screening as well. In light of that, and working with Sharon Denham, this was a very large undertaking, to say the least. We decided to look at these key areas of health issues and really adapted a survey based on other rural health surveys that we came in contact with that Sharon Denham had also used from Ohio University. We actually initially designed this study so that we could look at four distinct population groups and really focusing on what impact living in a rural area may have on these groups. So this survey that we developed was also to be disseminated to Amish and Mennonite communities, African American, and Appalachian women as well. This obviously caused a bit of a challenge in developing one survey instrument for all these population groups, especially when looking at Amish communities and trying to be sensitive to some of their cultural beliefs as well. But needless to say, we developed a 75-item questionnaire. We have over 300 and some variables, so unlike other presenters today, I had to really narrow the topic to fit the time. But what I wanted to share, too, is that our collection sites were pretty extensive. At the time in Ohio, we really focused in the central Ohio area, not just rural areas, I'll point out. But we had a booth at Gay Pride, very typical places to disseminate these type of surveys, where there were over 100,000 people who attend that event in Columbus. Actually, every year, there's the Ohio Lesbian Business Association has an annual lesbian festival, and there are about 2,000 women who attend this event, where we also had a booth. And also Stonewall Columbus submitted a mailing. Another snowball techniques were used to come up with a data set of 338 surveys. Now, I'm going to revisit this survey, this slide in just a minute, but if you notice, almost half of those surveyed in our study self-identified as lesbian. But you notice that we have about the same amount that's identified as missing. I'll explain to you how being all inclusive was a detriment to our study design, and I have a question for all of you, in fact, at the end of this. But needless to say, from the survey set that we had, we did have a few folks that were not going to be part of this initial study that we wanted to analyze, including those identified as transgender, heterosexual, or bisexual. So if we take that out, and if we just at this point put aside those indicated as missing data for the time being, our survey set has been drastically reduced to 151 women who identified as self-identified as lesbian, queer, or gay. I'm going to quickly, and I have more slides than minutes, so I'm going to quickly go through the demographic data so I can share with you the results of the study, which I think you'll find interesting as well. We had a mean age of 151 women, and from this point forward, I'll only be talking about those 151 surveys, a mean age of almost 43 years of age. Now, for personal status, over 60% of the women identify as living with the same-sex partner, and there were about 17% of women who were single and never married as well. But obviously, this was a population that was definitely partnered and had a higher educational level. Now, this is this particular variable was collapsed into these three categories. And believe me, I can understand your any questions you might have, because to me, it didn't seem like a really big difference between less than bachelor's, just a bachelor's or master's degree or higher, but education level did have a pretty significant impact on a number of variables. And also income level. This was a survey set of women who had relatively high household annual income, but if you notice, again, over 60% of the population of this survey was actually partnered, so this was more than likely a dual income coming into these families. Let me talk about, real quickly, I know this is a busy slide, on the self-identified health issues. And to us, extremely interesting. This was just a basic question that asked, again, what are health issues, to mark off any of the health issues. And if you notice, an overwhelming group identified self-identified depression as one of their key issues facing them. And if you know, there was an other category, too, that popped up, but there were a lot of specific diseases were mentioned in this category as well that really didn't fall into these other areas. The other listings there, you'll see high cholesterol, high blood pressure. But if you notice, what we didn't expect was to see asthma and thyroid condition up there in some of the top six categories of those health issues facing the community. And, of course, as you know, there could be some relationship between the thyroid issues and depression. So this is something very interesting to study for future studies as well. We also looked, of course, height and weight, and then we were able to calculate BMI. To me, this was very interesting because if you look at, that first category is women who are underweight and fall into standard BMI classifications, but if we look just to normal weight or just right weight, it seemed that the lesbian community in this study actually pretty well had it right. I mean, in terms of what they perceived themselves to be versus actual BMI level, they were pretty well on the mark. There just seemed to be a difference in those identified as slightly overweight versus extremely overweight, and it appeared that women in the overweight category seemed to underestimate the severity of their obesity. In fact, the mean weight was about 183 pounds, and the BMI, which was not unlike yours, was 29.8. To be honest with you, the frequency data, to me, were almost just as interesting as the statistical analyses that we ran, because this was really the first time we had a glimpse in Ohio of a study that looked at a number of different health-related issues. And as you see, the majority, overwhelming majority, had not ever been told they'd had any sexually transmitted diseases. What popped up the most included genital warts and type 2 herpes. Drug usage, again, something really did not come up as a huge concern in this community. Again, these are all self-identified, questions that we're looking at here. But about 14% of this population, of this survey size, identified that they had used marijuana in the last year, and that was really the largest. We did have 1.3% who had indicated that they had used cocaine. Tobacco usage. As you can see, over half had never smoked in this study. What we did with this particular, I'm going to spend just a few minutes on this, on the next two slides, looking at tobacco usage and alcohol usage, because I think we found some very interesting results in these two studies. As you can see, we were quite specific and we were looking at where people were in this spectrum of smoking, but we collapsed this into three categories of currently smoking, those who had quit smoking, and those who had never smoked. Now, what was interesting, I guess, we didn't find anything that came out of the norm. I just think it was interesting that we found some significant findings with respect to health-related issues and even physical activity. We asked a question on things that women did regularly, meaning daily or weekly, to take care of themselves. And there was a weak association between answering this question and tobacco usage. In women who identified as eating healthy or exercising as things that she did to regularly take care of her health. And actually, the more a woman smoked, the less likely she was indicate that she was eating healthy or exercising. Not at all a big shocker, but interesting that it was so significant in the study. There was also a weak negative association between taking herbs or vitamins regularly and tobacco usage. So the more women smoked, the less likely they were to be taking herbs or vitamins regularly. Now, there was, and I think this is really interesting, this falls in line with the tobacco usage and also alcohol usage with respect to domestic violence. And we had a series of questions that looked at both physical and verbal domestic abuse and also frequency of that abuse. And there was a positive association between smoking and let me just go back and read the question to you about the verbal abuse question. We asked, have you ever had a spouse or partner that said things to you that frightened you, such as threatening to harm you or someone close to you? And there was an association between that question and tobacco use. So the more a woman smoked, the more likely she was to have answered yes to this question, the more likely that she was involved in a verbally abusive relationship. The same applied with a series of questions that we had on fatalism and cancer. And if some of you have ever heard of Poe's fatalism scale, it's a 15-item scale, and we looked at this question. Now, we looked at the sum, the total score of fatalism, so the higher the score you received, the more fatalistic you were, and I'll talk about fatalism in just a second. But we also looked at the individual questions that were asked. So it didn't seem at all surprising that of all 15 items in the scale, there was only one question that was significantly associated with smoking, and the question was, and you answered yes or no to this, I believe someone can smoke all her life, and if she is not meant to get cancer, she won't get it. And you know what? The more a woman smoked, the more likely she was to agree with that statement. So let me talk as well about alcohol usage. And again, we collapsed this into three categories. As you can see, the majority of women only drank on special occasions. Now, I will say, too, that in all our locations where we conducted these surveys, alcohol was permitted, and it certainly, you could bring alcohol to the lesbian festival, but you could also buy alcohol at the gay pride event as well. So these are not areas where alcohol was restricted when women actually participated in this survey. So we actually looked at three categories, those who never drank, those who drank on special occasions, and those who drank weekly. Now, this to me was interesting. We asked a question, who impacts your decisions about healthcare issues? Now, there was a weak association between alcohol usage and those who answered me or myself. So the more a woman drank, the less likely she was to select herself as the one who most impacts her decisions about healthcare issues. I thought that was very interesting. Again, there was a weak association between alcohol usage and, again, this question on who impacts you most about making healthcare decisions. The more a woman drank, the more likely she was to select her physician as the one who most impacts her decisions about healthcare issues. I think this becomes very important as you look what implications we have for interventions in specifically targeting these population groups within the lesbian community. Now, there was a positive association when we looked at drug use, and again, there was very little drug usage that we saw, but there was an association between alcohol usage and smoking marijuana. So it was a positive association. Now, again, as we looked at the fatalism scale, we also noticed out of all 15 questions, only one was significantly associated with alcohol usage. And the statement was, and again, it was what you believe, true or false, I believe cancer kills most people who get it. Obviously, responding to this in the affirmative adds to the higher fatalism level. So the more a woman drank, the more likely she was to agree with this statement. Now, one of the strongest associations in this study was between alcohol use and actually physical domestic violence, physical abuse. The more likely that a woman was to experience domestic abuse, the more likely she was to consume alcohol more frequently. This is not surprising, but very significant in this study. I think what's unfortunate in our questioning is that we did not ask who, in what relationship did this abuse happen. So we did not identify gender in these specific questions, so we're not sure in what relationship this occurred. I hopefully still have just a few more minutes. I want to talk about two variables that popped up in this study that showed to have very significant associations, which, to be honest with you, never really expected. This is really not that complicated of a question. Basic yes or no, have you ever lived in a rural area? Didn't even think it was going to pop up in any way, shape, or form in this study, because rural is not defined in this question, means a lot of things to a lot of different people. We only ask it as a follow-up to find out where they lived and how many months they lived in the rural area to see if that made an impact. Well, and unfortunately, I know this sounds hard to believe because this was a rural health survey, but we just didn't catch on until the third revision that we probably should ask this question. So unfortunately, 37 cases were missing in this study because we didn't ask it in the first survey. But let me show you some of the significant associations that we found with rural living, whether or not you had lived in a rural area. And again, these are our moderate associations if we look at the values that we have here. And I highlighted one. There's several fatalism questions, individual items in the scale that show up significant. But one of the questions that we looked at was this total sum of the fatalism score. And as you see, there was, and this was surprising to me, I guess, in some of the work I'd done with other rural communities, but there was a negative association between whether or not you lived in a rural area and your total fatalism score. So actually, if you lived in a rural area, you were likely to be less fatalistic. I was expecting to see the opposite. And I think that goes into the other, all of these were negative associations that we found with respect to significant associations with rural area. But we also asked, again, who in the past year, who did you seek health care advice from? And actually, those who lived in a rural area were less likely to say that they got advice from their family doctor. So I think that's another very interesting piece. Also, we asked that question again about who impacts decisions about healthcare issues. Those who lived in a rural area are less likely to indicate their family or indicate their parents or kids in that response. Here's another question that, again, did not expect to show up so significantly in this study. And this was frequency of worship. And so we asked a number of questions about religious affiliation, but we asked, again, as you see, different levels of worshiping, whether you don't practice religion, all the way up to that you're going once a week or more. Now, there was a negative association between how often one worshiped, frequency of worship, and verbal abuse associated in a domestic violence situation. So for a woman who had experienced verbal abuse in a relationship, she was less likely to go to a place of worship. Moving on to cancer fatalism, I love how I have so many categories. We've shifted from the pretty blue shades into the others. The red does not indicate anything more severe than the other. I think it just ran out of colors. So at any rate, this is the fatalism scale, as you see. You can get a score of 0 to 15. Obviously, the higher the score, the more fatalistic the individual is. Actually, the mean score was 3.5. So this was fairly overall in the sample set. Not a very fatalistic group, which is interesting. We actually collapsed this into three categories of low, middle, and high. And we also established the reliability coefficient, because Poe's fatalism scale was actually first utilized with the African-American community. A more recent study has been conducted with the Latino community, but we did find a relatively high reliability coefficient that matched the coefficient that was found in Poe's research as well. We found, this again was interesting, we found a negative association between frequency of worship and fatalism score. So the more often you went to church, the less fatalistic you were. The same applied for education. Again, one of the other more significant associations we had. The more education you had, the less fatalistic you were. As I mentioned before, I talked about the dangers of being all-inclusive, and we really had this all figured out. We were going to just develop one survey, and it was going to be work for every population group. So as to not be offensive, again, being sensitive to the Amish community and having a separate question to identify sexual identity, we thought we'd develop one question that we just referred to as identity. And you probably can figure out what happened after that very first study. The very first the location that we went, because we had Caucasian or white listed first, that check all that apply seemed to not so much apply, especially given this was a 10-page survey, and women were busy filling this out and going to other events as well. So unfortunately, we lost a lot of women in this study that self-identify as lesbian, because once they clicked on the Caucasian, they didn't go to any other of these statements. So we did figure that out, and we changed that later. I know. I can't tell you how many people looked at this survey and thought that was great IRB approval with 14 people on a board, and no one said, you know, that might be an issue with this. We had several researchers look at this and didn't notice that either. So I just want to say as well that clearly limitations to this study, obviously this is a study that's not generalizable to other population groups and even to the rest of the lesbian community. But I think this helps shed light, and I think in the other research areas as well, I find that society often has a tendency to, of course, stereotype or generalize population groups. I find that presentations on, and I'm sure you've attended some on diversity series, not at all uncommon in my hospital system, to talk about the Latino community or the Amish community, the lesbian community. And as we see, in doing so, we're really going to limit our ability to be effective in developing interventions, because we find that, especially in looking at alcohol and tobacco usage, what a significant impact it has, and whether or not you had been in a verbal or physical abusive situation with another partner, and what impact that might have in developing other interventions. Of course, the community has led the way on this from start to finish, and we continue to work with the community to develop interventions with this study. My only question to you is that I know we had a bit of a disagreement with my colleague on this study, because she said, gosh, we collected 338 surveys, and yeah, that's too bad, 140 of them, all from the Lesbian Festival, did not mark and identify as lesbian. I think we should just go ahead and count them in the study. And as you know, there's not a lot of data out there, and there's really no study that's been published, I think, in Ohio. And my concern was, obviously, we have bisexual women, we have heterosexual women who attend this event as well, and it just seemed to me a great loss and misrepresentation to include that entire population group. I think it's our hope as next steps is we'd like to make comparisons between the entire data set and see if there's any really significant difference in the findings that we have. But a great loss, needless to say, with half the data missing. Thank you very much for your time.